Hello and welcome to the Creative Writers Tool Belt, the podcast that gives you advice and insights for your writing. I'm Andy Chamberlain. I'm a writer and creative writing coach, and in each episode, we'll be exploring an aspect of the craft together. You can find out more at my website, andrewjchamberlain.com, where you can also find out about the Creative Writers Tool Belt Handbook, which takes all the best advice and insights from the early episodes of the podcast and distills them into one volume. I hope this podcast is helpful to you on your writing journey. If you do find it useful, please do subscribe and consider leaving a review as well wherever you downloaded it. So thank you for joining me, and here's this episode. Welcome to episode 169 of the Creative Writers Tool Belt. In the next few episodes, I'm going to be exploring the fundamentals of story structure. We're going to be looking at different perspectives on story and story structure with the help of a number of guests, and I'm looking forward to hearing what they have to say and sharing those insights with you. By way of an introduction, in this episode, I want to ask a deceptively simple question, and it's this: what does a really good story look like? And I'm going to try and answer this question by first exploring what I mean by the word story, and then looking at what the content of a good story should be, and what structures we should use to present that story in the best possible way. So what follows is just an introduction, but I hope it's a good start and the basis from which we can then discover some great insights on other dimensions of the craft of writing, including creating and developing character, developing setting, presenting themes, and refining our own narrative style. So let's start by looking at what I mean by the word story. So when we look at definitions of the word story, we find this sort of thing. A story is an account of imaginary or real people and events told for entertainment. A story is an account of past events in someone's life or in the development of something. Now, I suppose these definitions are okay, but I think they miss the full potential of story. Though certainly, a story can be an account from the past, and it can and should perhaps entertain us, but it has to be so much more than that. The great editor Sol Stein said that the intention of a story is to, and I quote, provide the reader with an experience that is superior to the experiences that they encounter in everyday life. Now, I think that's true, and it's interesting to note here that the focus of the story in Sol Stein's definition is on the reader and not on the writer, the author, the creator of the story. And we'll come back to that insight again a bit later. It's also useful, I think, to give the word experience as broad a definition as possible. So a superior experience could be good entertainment, but it could also be the potential to make the reader think, to teach them something, to impart some wisdom, to comfort, to encourage, to even solve a problem for them. So great stories can engage with their readers in many ways. Now let's come back to this issue of how a story should focus on the reader and connect with the reader where they are. A great story comes to the reader and not only connects with them, it also has the capacity to take them on a journey. Now, for all of this to happen, the reader must identify with the story and be prepared to engage with it, in some sense, to allow the story into their lives and then let the story take them to that better place. And that's very likely to mean that the story has to enthrall them and entertain them at some level. But perhaps also some of the story has to rub off on the reader to give them something that they didn't have before. Thinking of story as an encounter that requires trust, openness, and acceptance from the reader emphasizes the challenge and the privilege that we have as storytellers and writers. We have to create a piece of art that captures our reader, holds them, and gives them something of value, something that will help them live better lives. And with all of this, I think we're approaching something better in terms of a proper definition for what story is. As Sol Stein says, we're trying to provide a superior experience to the reader, something that they recognize, something that they will willingly engage with, and something that will bless them and encourage them and entertain them and take them on in their life. When we think about stories in this way, we begin to see them as being like the very best products that we've used, the very best software, the very best applications that we use every day, things which successfully help us to live our lives. These things also give us a superior experience. And it's perhaps no wonder then that for me, the person who gives the best explanation of the structure of story and the way story works isn't actually an author or an editor or a creative writing coach, but someone who has worked in the area of user experience. So that's someone who helps technology companies to design their products so that they best connect with their customers and most usefully serve them. And that person is the speaker and leadership coach, Donna Lischel. And in the episode after this one, I'll be talking to Donna about how she uses the principles of story in her work. So a good story is reader-focused, and good stories go to where the reader is, bringing them something they can identify with and then giving them that superior experience in entertainment, sharing wisdom, giving hope and vision and encouragement. The good story gives the readers insights for life. Now, I should say that the process I'm talking about here is a description of classical story structure. There are other more contemporary structures, which are, in fact, I think, derivatives of this root structure. For example, there are stories which just give a slice of life. They certainly try to present the reader with something that they can identify with, but they may not necessarily be giving any answers. These stories may present what we believe to be truths about life without necessarily giving much in the way of an insight or wisdom for how to live that life. But for now, I want to focus on this classical story structure, something which has been tried and tested and improved and worked on and proved itself over hundreds and thousands of years. I want to look at the way story structure works, what the components of it are, and the way it provides an identifiable and superior experience to the reader, and the potential to give the reader that something extra that we've talked about. Now, if we believe these ideas about story are true, then we're drawn to ask two more important questions. And these are, first of all, if I'm going to create a story, what kind of themes and content should I put into it? And secondly, how then am I going to structure that story so that I can tell it in the most effective and compelling manner? Let's start by looking at the first of those questions. What kind of themes and content should I think about in the context of the stories that we want to tell? Well, we've already said that the story needs to go where the reader is. So it needs to be something that would interest a reader, something that matters to them, something that they can connect with. So the story needs to both align with the reader and then take them on the journey that we want the story to go on. So what are the themes that might do this? Well, the good news is that over many years, and I'm talking about centuries and thousands of years, great storytellers from around the world have identified a number of key themes, and they seem to be cross-cultural and apply to people whatever their context is. Now, I've borrowed this list from the Masterclass series, although you'll find that the same themes are presented by many different commentators on the subject of story. So let's see what we've got. Well, first up is good versus evil. So many of our stories are framed in this way, with the presupposition that there are opposing moral forces and that there is a right and wrong way to live, however we perceive good and evil. If we have this as a frame of reference, it immediately gives us a quest, a task, an internal and an external challenge. Internal, in that the quest for good will provoke changes within us towards that idea of what is good, and external in that we seek to bring our vision of what is good to the world. And in doing so, we will encounter people who agree with that vision, in some broad sense, and those who are opposed to it, and whom we might define as evil. These are the people who are seeking to bring their own very different vision to the world. It is this clash of ideas expressed internally and externally which gives us one of the most essential ingredients for story structure, and that is conflict. And we'll explore this issue of conflict a little bit more in a moment. The next major theme that we can explore in story is love in all its forms. Love certainly scores well as a theme our readers can identify with. It exists at the core of our lives. We experience it, we long for it, we observe different manifestations of it. Romantic love, family love, love of our tribe, love of our nation, love for our friends. And love can provide fertile ground for us as writers in our stories. Love to be fought for, love to be won, love to be enjoyed, love to be protected. Love, in all its forms, weaves itself into our lives, and good stories in this area have the potential to entertain us and teach us something, to call us to something more, to learn more, to be more than who we are now. The third source of content, which is akin to love, is the theme of redemption. To be redeemed, restored, forgiven is a deep longing in all of us. It's bound up with us in our identity. Who we think we are and who we think we should be and who others think we should be is closely intertwined with this issue of being redeemed, being forgiven, and being restored. And this closeness between identity and redemption mean that this theme is full of potential for story. The next theme I would suggest is courage and perseverance. Stories around these themes also speak to our desire to be something more than who we are, to test ourselves, to see if we have the character to meet the challenge, to conquer the dragon, to save that which we love, to face the unknown. These stories tap into a longing and ambition within us. We cheer on the hero and hope that something in his or her achievements can be reflected in our own lives. The next source of story I would suggest is coming of age. It's something we all do. And these stories, like the stories of courage and perseverance, give us markers or waypoints to show the way for us as we progress in life. They show how we can be who we should be. So these stories, like so many others, give us a sense of who we are and where we are now and where we could get to. They help us to solve problems highlighted by questions like, how should I live? How should I act? Who should I be? And my final source is revenge. There are few motivations as compelling and sweet, at least superficially sweet, as revenge. Because we exist with an inbuilt moral framework, when we see that framework being attacked or broken or abused, we're offended and experience a powerful desire for justice and perhaps an even stronger desire for revenge. And this desire will align readers to revenge stories and keep them hooked as the story unfolds. So these six areas give us some indication of the kind of content that might attract readers. And these areas overlap and flow out, so they don't just hold within themselves, they create greater themes, the hero's journey, the victory of the underdog, the achievement of the seemingly impossible task. So it's worth noting that these themes can connect and overlap with each other in story. And it's also interesting to see the commonality between them. Stories based on this sort of content appeal to our innate sense of moral framework, right and wrong, whatever that is for each of us. They appeal to a desire in us to learn how to live. They show us how to experience love well as life well. We want to learn about courage and perseverance. We want to have a roadmap to see how we should grow up and live, to confront evil and to avenge it. And now that we have some ideas about content, let's go on and have a look at story structure itself. If you research the concept of story structure, you'll find that there are many theories that are presented as a way to describe this, and they have a varying number of steps to them. There's the three-act structure. You'll hear this talked about a lot. But you'll also perhaps hear mention of the five-act structure, the six, seven, nine-step structure. All of these things are broadly saying the same thing, that a good story is a journey with a beginning and an end and with a number of waypoints in between. So let's explore just one of these models in a little bit more detail to see how they actually work. And the one I'm going to use is the six-stage story structure. And it's the one that I tend to use for the stories that I write, and it's based on the thinking that Donna Lischow uses in her work as well. So the six stages in this model are these. Stage one, the start or opening exposition, in which we set the scene for our story, gain the reader's attention and create a situation which requires change and action. Either the situation the characters are in is good, but it's under threat, or it's not satisfactory, it's not good. So the reader is at their most critical and receptive at the start of the story. They're deciding whether it's worth them spending time in your story. As writers, we must make that decision as easy for them as possible. We must capture them almost before they realise it. To do this and to achieve the other objectives at the start, we must set out our stall. We must indicate something of what the story is going to be about, who it's going to involve, and we'll present at least one of the main characters, an intriguing story element, and an immersive setting. So this first stage is the point where, as the author, as the writer, we make a bargain with our reader. We're saying, this is going to be such a good story that you're going to be richly rewarded by making the commitment to read it or listen to it, engage with it. And all of that leads us into the next stage, which is the inciting incident. You will recall a few minutes ago I was talking about the incident which changes the status quo at the start of the story and which incites the characters in it to actually get involved and take action. That moment in the story is very often called the inciting incident. This is the moment where the story takes off. The protagonist's circumstances may often change at this point, often for the worst, as the incident acts as the catalyst for the protagonist to start pursuing their goal, either proactively or because they've been forced to by circumstance. It's the point where the author stops setting the scene and the storyline really gets going. And we can see how the inciting incident works with these three very quick examples. First of all, the inciting incident in the first book in the Hunger Games series is the moment where Katniss decides to take her sister Primrose's place when Primrose's name is drawn for the games. It's the moment in The Wizard of Oz when Dorothy is whipped up by the cyclone and whisked off to Oz. It's the moment in The Lord of the Rings when Gandalf discovers that Bilbo's ring is the One Ring, and he knows that it simply can't be hidden in a hobbit's house in the Sleepy Shire. All the evil power of Mordor is going to come to the Shire and destroy it. So the inciting incident transforms the flavour and tempo of the story. It addresses the need for change and action that we've set out in the first stage. And it heralds a period of rising action, a period of increasing consequences, of great tension that come in the next stage of the story, stage three, which is what I call the momentum stage or the rising action stage. And this is usually the longest stage in the story and allows space for the development of all of the dimensions of the story so the characters can develop. Setting can become richer and more immersive, the conflict can start to build, and the themes that we want to explore in our story and highlight can begin to form and coalesce. And when story is represented as a diagram or an image, this is the stage which is often represented as a hill going upwards. The narrative is climbing up one side of the hill towards the apex. And it does this with a series of successively more serious, difficult, important challenges for the protagonists to face. But to climb this hill, you need momentum. And so this is the stage of the story where you need to have a strong story engine. And by that, I mean a strong motivation for the characters, lots of reasons for the characters to be desperately invested in what's happening, and by association, the reader to stay invested in what's happening as well. Invested, in fact, all the way to the next stage, which I call the crisis stage. This is stage four. The word crisis is best interpreted in this context from its literal roots in the ancient Greek language. And there, the root word for crisis means not necessarily something terrible, but the point of making a decision. And that's a good way to think of this stage in the story. The characters have made choices and taken actions, or things have happened to them, in fact, which have brought them in the story, taken them up that hill in the momentum stage, all the way to this decisive moment. The crisis represents something of a paradox in the story. We're aiming for the reader to think that the characters are making choices and exercising agency, but also have a sense that this outcome was bound to happen, that this was the point we were all moving to. By way of an example, if you think about all the choices that Frodo must make in Lord of the Rings, and we know that he's making those choices all the time as he's traveling with the Fellowship, as he's traveling just with Sam and Gollum, all these different choices, and it looks like he's making those choices out of his own sense of agency. But we know as readers that he must resolve the problem of the ring. And additionally, in doing so, he must also resolve the challenge of Gollum. So the crisis is the point of no return. The characters have made all these choices, all these things have happened, and this is it. This is the tipping point just before we get into the stage where things are going to be resolved one way or the other. It's the edge of the precipice, if you like. There's no going back after this. And with the momentum of the story moving forward, inevitably we tip into stage five, which is the climax itself. The meeting of the two forces, the meeting of two different worldviews, the meeting of good and evil, the villain and the hero. This is where these two forces, which cannot coexist, have to meet to be resolved. It could be, in a love story, the absolute point at which the lovers have to either come together or be torn apart. This is the section of your story ushered in by the moment of crisis. The hero will succeed or fail. The quest is won or lost. Love prevails or dies. So hopefully, if this is a good story, the reader's right there with you. They want to see what happens. They want to see what the outcome is. And this is the point where that outcome is determined. Stage 5, the climax stage. And when that climax is over, we then move into the final stage, the 6th stage in this model of story, the resolution, where we see the consequences of the outcome of the climax and then the close of the story. In this stage, 3 things should really be happening. First of all, we tie up any subplots that are still running. Secondly, we can show the wider implications of the result of the climax. And finally, we can just let the audience catch their breath and come down, as it were, from the tension and drama of the climax. So to go back to The Lord of the Rings, again as an example, the resolution stage of the story comes after the destruction of the ring. It involves the reclaiming of the Shire, Aragorn's coronation and wedding, Frodo's departure by boat with the elves into the West. It is in the resolution stage that we see the new order of things settle and coalesce. And so a great story comes full circle. Adventures are had, challenges are met and overcome, or not overcome in the case of tragedy, and a life as usual, or some form of life as usual, is restored. Now, I explore the issue of story structure more fully in some of the early episodes of the podcast and also in the book which accompanies the podcast. And in the next few episodes, starting with my conversation with Donna Lischow, I'm going to be exploring this issue of story structure in more detail with different guests who each have their own interesting points of view to make, and we'll seek to identify the most useful and actionable insights. So that's how I think story works. We've talked about the kind of content that stories need to have to be compelling, to draw the reader in, to give them a promise, and to take them on the journey. And we've also talked about the structure of stories and the way in which the action starts, it rises to a climax, and then falls again. So I hope that you found this introduction to storytelling and story structure useful, and I thank you for listening. And so until the next episode, goodbye. Thank you for listening to the Creative Writers Toolbelt podcast. You can find out more about the podcast at my website, andrewjchamberlain.com, where you can also find details of the Creative Writers Toolbelt handbook, which takes all the best advice and insight from the early episodes of the podcast and distills it into one volume. I hope this episode has been helpful to you on your writing journey. If it has, please consider leaving a review for the Creative Writers Toolbelt podcast wherever you download it. Thank you for listening to this episode, and goodbye.